Go ahead and get started. Today is general questions, anything goes. I'm expecting Monday to be a little quiet, especially this week because we have the holiday. So right now, calls are starting to come in, but questions are pretty light. So if you want to get through, now is your chance. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, press one on your phone. And if you do that pretty quick, I promise we'll get to you. I'll keep you updated on the calls as we go. Let's go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Couple things. It's the fourth quarter again. I know it comes faster and faster every year. It's time to get your accounting in order. Actually, you should always have your accounting in order, but I know most owner-operators still don't. And in the fourth quarter, we always try to help you out with this. We run a special. You can try our accounting software free. And not only can you try it free for 30 days, but we open up the program. You can go all the way back to January of this year, put in the entire year's worth of accounting, won't cost you anything at all. And you'll get a separate profit and loss and a separate business report for each month. If you want to call the show, I'll help you understand those numbers as well. And when you finish up the year, you'll get a one-page document for your tax return. And you can email that directly to your tax preparer. If you want to work with us on your taxes, we'd love to do that for you. And then you don't have to do anything because we have the numbers right in our system. We can also do your accounting for you. If you don't want to do your accounting, we can do that for you. It's full service. You send in the receipts and the settlements. I really prefer that you try doing it on your own. I think you learn much, much more about your business when you do your own. And we've made it easy. Our software is drop dead simple. It takes 20 to 30 minutes a month, just once a month, 20 to 30 minutes to get all your numbers in for the month, get your report, understand what's going on. You'll pay less in tax. And we have training programs. We'll help you every step of the way. It just doesn't get any easier. So go to the website and check it out. It's letstruck.com. CMC 2017 registration is now open. Are going to be back in Council Bluffs, Iowa at the Mack Center. We're very excited about that. It's a great location, tons of space. Last year's event was awesome. And of course, next year's event is going to be even better. So get signed up. We have the payment plan. So you only need about $100 or so to get your seat reserved and make sure you're there with us in Council Bluffs. This year, we're also doing something very special. We're excited about this. We've wanted to do this for a long time. We just haven't been able to because we've always been sold out. But now that we have the extra space, we are now offering a pretty steep spouse discount. So if you want to bring your spouse, we get this question every year. We highly encourage it. We find that people who come to the event together get much more out of it. And because we now have multiple lanes and multiple topics that we're covering, when you have two people, you can split up, go to two different sessions. We do allow recording, something you almost never find at seminars, but we want you to learn the material. So we allow you to record. So if both of you are coming, you can get twice as much recorded. You go to different sessions, record them, then you'll have the material. And that's our goal. We want you to learn this stuff. So you can sign up yourself right on the website. Again, letstruck.com. You can't miss it. It's on the homepage. Or if you have any questions, you can call us. We'll answer all your questions. We'll get you signed up, whatever you need. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. If you want to be a part of our recordings or our podcast, it's real easy to get signed up so that we'll send you a text message every time we're doing a recording or a podcast. All you have to do is text the word listen to 99,000. So just like you were going to send it to a phone number, but you're sending it to a short code. 99000 is the code. That's where you would put the phone number. Put that instead. And in the body of the text, just one word. Just put in listen. Don't worry about caps or anything. Just text the word listen to 99,000. Then every time we're doing a recording or a podcast, we'll send you a text message about 20 minutes ahead of time so you know we're doing it. And the phone number will be right in the text. Click the phone number on your phone and you'll be joining us. If emails all the time from people who say they dial and dial and dial and they just can't get through, if you join us on the recordings, it is much easier to get through. In fact, I'll promise you, if you dial in early, I'll get to your question every time. All right. Speaking of getting to questions, let's get to some right now. Let's start off in Virginia. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I was wondering if you could look at my business report. I've been in business now since the end of June, and it seems like I've got more cash on hand than what the business report would say. And in September, I think I had a pretty good month. I was wondering if you could take a look at the two and compare.
All right, let's take a look. I'm looking at September right now. Let me open up the year.
My concern is I can't tell the escrow money that I put in. Is that showing up on the bottom line? Because it seems like I have more cash than what that says I should have.
The escrow, depending on how you categorized it, should not show up. Let me see if I see it anywhere. If you set it up as the proper type retained of account, retained earnings, correct, then it will not show up on the business report. Because it is there as part of the profit, but it's not going to show separately because what we're showing on the business report is income and expense. That money's already been accounted for as income, and it's not an expense. It's still your money. So we allow you to enter it because it comes off your settlement, but we don't want it to show up on this report. So okay. The money that's in that account is showing up as part of your net profit. Does that make sense?
So it is on the bottom line?
It is included. Yes, it is included in the number that's showing as profit because it showed up as income and we never deducted it as an expense because it's not. It's still your money.
Okay. All right.
So
being at Landstar, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, being at Landstar only a few months now, it's taking a while to learn the system and talk to people and different things. That September, I felt like I did pretty well. I'm still disappointed with the revenue. Is that typical revenue, or am I doing well? Am I doing below average?
Now, let's look at the whole year first, and then I'll go over to September, because that'll be a good indication of how, if and how we're progressing. Right now, looking at your revenue, it's low. Even though rates are down right now, I'm still seeing most owner-operators at Landstar are doing in the $1.50 to $1.70 range. Most are hanging out right around $1.60. You're at $1.24. And like you said, you're new, you're learning the system. What I would start working on revenue-wise is I would identify some parts of the country you really like to spend time in. And maybe you pick two or three or four. And I would start finding the agents in those areas that have the freight you like, make some phone calls. I always recommend when you identify an agent, and for people who are listening, if you're not familiar with the Landstar system, it is as close to being on your own authority as you can get without having your own authority. So when I'm talking to somebody who has their authority, and I talk about building relationships with brokers, the agent is exactly like a broker when you have your own authority. The Landstar system is different than most carriers. You don't deal with a central dispatch. You're not told where to go. You're not really given a choice of two or three loads. You have the entire system available to you. And Landstar has a huge network of agents. The word agent in this case is almost interchangeable with broker. The agent is the person that goes out, finds the freight, posts it. So in Landstar's system, when I say agent, it's just like saying a broker when I'm talking to somebody with their own authority. So I would identify a couple areas of the country like. I would find some agents in that area that have some freight you like, and I would actually get out and meet them. I would go take them to lunch, take them to dinner, take them to a ball game, whatever. Take them out golfing, whatever you like to do. That's how you build relationships, and that's how you're going to find the best freight. So let me get to a break. I'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that, and then we'll go over the rest of your numbers. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, I was talking with Dave in Virginia. We're going to get back to some numbers. So, Dave, this is why I love having the business report, being able to look at the numbers and using our software. If we look at the whole year so far, and like you said, you just started in June, the numbers aren't all that great. I mean, $1.24 is low on revenue. You're fuel and maintenance costs are okay. We could have worked on those a little bit. But the beauty now is we can look at September and say, what's the trend? So for the whole year, you were grossing $1.24 a mile and netting 36 cents a mile. But if we look at September, the most recent month, you're grossing $1.46. That's an excellent improvement. We're heading in the right direction. And you're keeping 59 cents of it. So you've increased your revenue. And you have decreased your expenses. You've done both, which is excellent. And you're at 59 cents a mile net. Great place to be, especially since you haven't been doing that this all that long yet. And you're keeping about 41 cents out of every dollar you earn. Those are great numbers. And you're heading in the right direction. So I would just keep doing what you're doing. And I would focus more on the revenue side. I mean, you can play around with fuel and maintenance costs and keep working on those and get them a little lower. But I would be out finding agents I wanted to work with and building the relationships.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely a project that I want to get involved with. But as far as maintenance, I've got about $8,000 more I've got to put in the truck, and there's no time frame. I'm trying to figure out what. Based on the number there, my goal when I came here was about $3,500 to the truck a week minimum at $1.40. Okay. That was the first goal, and I reached that. But I'm now trying to figure out a number to put towards maintenance that's reasonable without being excessive.
What year's your truck and how many miles?
It's a 2012 glider. All right, Series 60, 585,000 miles. I got to put the balancer and the crank dampener. I got to do the turbo, and I have to do the clutch and bell housing and stuff.
Got it. Okay. So overall, with that truck, with the 2012 glider, less than 600,000 miles, you will get by with about 10 cents a mile in maintenance once things kind of settle down. In the beginning, it's always more expensive. You're getting the truck back to the way you like it. You're making modifications. So I don't get too crazy about the maintenance cost in the first year. It's almost always high. And I want to see it high in the first year. That tells me you're doing the things that, you know, are going to make the truck more efficient. We're going to lower maintenance cost overall. So about 10 cents a mile should cover you. If you set aside 12 cents a mile, you're going to be fine. You'll probably have some extra left over every year, which you can always throw into a retirement account or, you know, do another upgrade or whatever you want to do. But you are definitely in the right direction. And for only being doing this for, you know, less than half a year, it's a great progression I'm seeing.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. There, right there, is a great example of the beauty of numbers. And here's somebody who started day one, had their numbers in. We can see what's going on. We can see what's working. We know where he should spend his time to make things even better. That's the beauty of running the business this way. Let's go to Georgia. Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm an owner-operator. Recently, I've been driving for about 10 years as a company driver, but about a year ago, I bought a 2010 Freightliner with a DD15. Running good. Got about 150,000 on it so far, and really haven't spent much money at all. Just batteries, and that's about it. I have synthetic oil in it, and I'm getting ready to put the purification system. I hear you talk about oil sampling, and I do believe in oil sampling. Change the oil when it needs to. Are all oil samples basically going to give you the same results, whether you do it at Caterpillar, OPS, or where would you recommend? Or do you get different, more information or less at different places?
You do. Good question. And let's go over, first of all, where I don't want you to do oil sampling. The two big differences in oil analysis is on the bottom end, you're going to find places like Speedco and certain shops that will do what they call a bench top oil sample. Those are not even worth doing. In fact, I think it's worse if you do those. And the reason is they're not very accurate. The people running the machine aren't really trained all that well. We don't know how well things get cleaned. And the reason I say it's worse than doing nothing is because if you go get a sample from one of these benchtop units and it says everything's okay, then you might be tempted to keep the oil in the truck. And it might not be okay. There might be something wrong with it. And the sample just didn't pick it up because they're not really good samples. On the other hand, if it comes back and it says something wrong, we've seen this happen. It's contamination from somebody else's sample or who knows why we got the reading. Then you run off and start spending money trying to fix a problem that doesn't exist. So I say you're better off not even doing samples. So then what we wanted you is what's called a full service lab. This isn't going to be done on the spot. You're going to put the sample in a bottle. You're going to mail it off to the lab. As long as you're using a reputable full service lab, and there are several of them in the country, you're going to be okay on most things. Most labs are pretty accurate. And we do a lot of testing. I used to send samples out to multiple labs. You know, oil right out of one truck, send it out to four different labs and see what I got back. Most of the time, the results were really, really similar. So most full service labs are just fine. in the last couple of years, though, something's changed. The fuel blends, because of all the biodiesel and the ultra low sulfur, it's changed the fuel, and a lot of labs can't detect fuel dilution anymore. We've noticed that there are some labs that will show no fuel dilution when there really is fuel dilution. Polaris Labs, the one we use, the same lab that OPS uses, they have the latest, really, really sensitive equipment to find fuel dilution. So Polaris really is our lab of choice. But if you're using another full-service lab and you're not sure if they can detect fuel dilution, we could always look at viscosity. If there is fuel dilution, viscosity will always go down. I like having both numbers, though. I like to see the fuel dilution the way we can at Polaris, and then I verify it by saying, yep, there's fuel dilution, and we know there is because viscosity went down. So we really do prefer Polaris, and you know, that's the lab we work with all the time. We have access to the samples. And that way, when people call in, we pull up.
Okay. Is Polaris associated with the OPS fuel system, or is it a separate lab?
They're separate companies, but OPS uses Polaris labs exclusively for their samples, and we do for ours as well.
Okay, so to get my oil sampled, I would have to get a sample kit from Polaris? I'd have to contact them and have them mail me one?
No, you can get it from our store. We carry them right in our store. You can go to letstruck.com and go to the store, and you can order the sample kits directly from us. And they come with everything you need, the bottles, the labels, the mailer. So you fill up the bottle, you fill out the paperwork, stick it in the mailer, send it to them, and in 3 or 4 days, you'll get results emailed back.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I've been confused. Where do I get it? Are they all equal? That's a lot of good information there. I use AMSOIL, and AMSOIL has a testing service. I've never used it, but I didn't know whether they will do a similar result. But I'll just go with the Polaris from what you just said. And I'd like to get more control over my operation of my business. I use an accountant now out of Florida where I live, but she's familiar with trucking accounting from a tax standpoint. The problem is I don't get the results of what my cost per mile and all of that is. To get involved with your system, I just go to your website, and it's so much per month, so much per year.
Yeah, so we've got a couple different options. The one that I recommend is that you use our software online, but you actually do the data entry yourself. And we'll train you on how to do it. It's pretty simple. We'll even do the first month for you. We have a startup program. So we go in and we set up all the accounts just for you. We take your data from 1 month and we enter it, so that you see how the system is set up and where things go. And then we do a one-on-one training with you. It's for as long as you need until you figure it out. That's the program. That's $19 a month. When I come back, I'll explain the other options. You could continue to use your current tax preparer if you want. You could use our tax service. It's really up to you. But I think the real advantage is using our software to get the reports. And by you doing the data entry, you are going to understand your numbers so much better than if you let somebody else do it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're talking about accounting. It's that time of year. If you don't have a system, you should head on over to our website. You can sign up for a free trial. And I was going over some of the options. So, Bob, that's really what I find works best. When people take the time to do their own, they understand the numbers so much better. So our software is $19 a month. Or if you just say, look, I hate numbers, I hate paperwork, I'm not going to do this, but I still want those reports, we have a full service option that includes us doing all of the data entry. So every month we provide you with an envelope. It's already prepaid and pre-addressed. You put all your receipts and settlements in there, send it to us. We do all the data entry. You have online access to your numbers and your reports. And the same thing, taxes. You can either keep your current tax preparer, you can use our service. So we give you a couple different options. Again, I always recommend trying it yourself first.
Right. Yeah, I can do that. I'm familiar with the computer and so forth. And if I do all of the data entry myself and have the reports, then either your accountant or my accountant then has everything they need except possibly just depreciation, figuring the annual stuff like the depreciation on the equipment and so forth.
Yep,
because that's
exactly.
Not in your monthly report, right?
Correct.
That would
we
be
don't
more
do,
on the that like the P&L stuff.
Yeah, and that's more
at
of
the
a
end of the year.
Yeah, it's more of a
right.
tax issue at the end of the year. Now, what we do in our business report, we will show your truck payments, which doesn't necessarily have anything to do with taxes because of depreciation, but our business report is more about cash flow. How is the business doing?
Right.
So yeah, so it'll show the truck payment as an expense. At the end of the year, you'll get a tax report that only lists the numbers that are pertinent to the tax return, and then we calculate
right.
depreciation just once a year on the tax return itself.
Right. Okay, I'll get to the website and get started on that. I can always back enter the rest of the year from January up till now, right? Get that
exactly.
keyed in.
Yep.
Either that or just key it all in as 1 month at this point.
I would honestly,
and then continue.
Here's what I would recommend. I would recommend taking a day, and it's not going to take you more than a day. I would recommend taking a day, get all your numbers and receipts and stuff separated by month. Each month is only going to take you about 20 or 30 minutes. The first couple might take a little longer till you get used to the system. There's two advantages to doing it this way, though. Instead of putting everything in as 1 month, if you put individual month in, you're going to get different reports so you can see the progression. But the other thing it does, if you sit down and you do, 8 months all at one time, you are going to learn the system really quickly. You'll
right.
just know it inside and out by the time you're done with those 8 months. And then after that, it's going to be a breeze.
Okay. And I don't have my own authority yet, and I've tried a guy who couldn't keep me busy. I tried another guy for about 6 weeks, and he ended up owing me. He had a cash flow problem. He hasn't paid me. Now I'm pulling for a guy that I'm grossing about. He's taking 22% off the top, but he's giving me $5,000 gross weeks. So I think that's pretty good. I'm not ready. I don't have enough cash to be my own authority yet. I don't want to fool around with waiting on getting paid from brokers and having to factor. He pays 5% to factor his receivables, but he gets some 100% receivable factoring for 5%, but that's probably worth it. And he doesn't haul a load unless the factoring company agrees to factor that particular broker's load.
Okay.
In advance.
And he's
got a lot of reasons, too.
The number he's giving, if you can do $5,000 a week, that's a great, that's an excellent gross. 22% seems expensive, but I don't really care. There's a lot left over even after he takes his 22%. So he's obviously getting good freight to be able
right.
to pay that way.
But see, he's also paying all of my insurance, which is probably, including my bobtail. So see, that's probably $1,200 a month, and plus he's paying 5% on the receivables. Well, 5% of 20, there's another $1,000. So he's laying out over 10%, somewhere around 10, but he's taking 22. I figure he's making maybe $500 a week off of me because of the insurance he pays and the factoring that he factors his receivables.
Right. And I don't have a problem with that. I think those are great numbers. So that sounds like you're hooked up pretty well as far as that goes.
Yeah. And when I get enough money in the bank, I would get my own authority and try to get some other guys and grow. But
there you go.
I got to get the accounting under control first so I know what I'm doing. And,
well,
I'm happy with it so far.
Yep. Get the software. Like I say, take a day, get all the whole year in, and after that, it'll just be a breeze.
Okay. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Texas. Les, welcome to the program.
Kevin, how's it going today?
Good. What's on your mind?
First of all, if you have any more shows like you did Saturday, they're going to have to put you on another network because you make a lot more sense than a lot of the pundits normally do. So that was a great show Saturday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. If we, by using my company's comp data card, I get a discount off of fuel. And the difference shows up, what I really pay is on my settlement, but what shows up on the receipt is the pump price. So do I still need to keep the receipt for tax purposes, or can I work off the settlements for that?
You can work off the settlements. And I recommend just get rid of the receipts. They're not accurate. Other than, you know, if you have to turn them in for fuel tax or something like that, and most of the time we don't today because that's all electronic, you don't need those receipts. The settlement is the correct number, and that's a legitimate record-keeping option for the IRS. The settlement's just fine.
Okay, and another question is, you know, I've gotten work done on my truck. I've seen the receipts for it, but because it's going through the company, I haven't started paying for it. So when do I figure that into my cash flow? When they start taking it out of my settlement?
You know, this one's totally up to you. The thing about accounting is there are always decisions like this to make. If you want to just enter the receipt as you get it, so you go in, you get the work done, you get a receipt, but you're not paying the bill, you could enter it then. Or if you want it to reflect your true cash flow closer, you would deduct it from the settlements. What you want to be careful, and either way is fine, whatever you prefer. What I warn people about is be careful that you don't do both. I've seen a lot of people make that mistake. They'll do the receipt because they have it, and then they go to put in their settlement and they don't realize or they don't think about it that they've already deducted that, and they take it again when it comes off their settlement. So either the receipt or the settlement, just make sure you don't do both.
Okay. And fuel tax, is that deductible from income taxes?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Wisconsin. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Can I help you today?
I am calling. I've been an owner-operator since February of 2014, and kind of to the point where I'm thinking I want to get my own authority and fly my own loads. So the one challenge I think I kind of have is I do need to be home on the weekends with the kids, but I'm thinking I can still get it done just on a regional basis. I have talked to a couple of brokers that'll work with me. Talked to one place where I could probably get some direct freight, but it'll be pretty hit and miss with that. So I'm just wondering if you have any other ideas for me on making sure I can keep the truck rolling during the week.
Where is home?
Rochester, Minnesota, kind of southeast of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah, you know, you're in a good area. You're in a part of the country where running regional is pretty easy, and regional can be pretty close. Like if you get out to the West Coast, regional is pretty tough because there's a lot of distance between most cities out in the West Coast, where once you get to the Midwest, East Coast, that part of the country, it's a lot more densely populated. It's a lot easier to run regional. So let me get to a break. I'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the calls. I was talking with Brad in Wisconsin. So, Brad, you're in a good part of the country. I think running regional will be pretty simple. I did this for a long time when I was in Ohio. And typical for me would be leave out late Sunday night, early Monday morning with a Monday delivery usually. I could usually work it out so I'd get back through the house on Tuesday, late Tuesday, Wednesday sometime, and then back again late Friday night, early Saturday morning. And I was able to get a lot of miles in, make a lot of money, and be home, you know, most of all weekends and usually one more time during the week. So yep. I would keep doing what you're doing. I would be spending time mostly with brokers. Nothing wrong with going looking for direct freight, but you're going to have a bigger challenge with that. You've got one truck. That's tough. It's not impossible. But you've also got some restrictions. You're not going to want to go to the West Coast. You're not going to want to go to the Deep South. You're going to want to stay closer to home. It just makes it a little more challenging to go out and find direct freight. So what I would do is find the brokers who have that regional freight in the areas you like to go. And I don't think getting home on the weekend is going to be a big challenge for you. I think it's going to be pretty easy. And then once you've got that kind of stabilized, then you could spend time going out looking for some direct freight. But I think in the beginning, I would just find a couple good brokers that can get you out of that area within, you know, 600 miles or so is kind of going to be your target. And I would draw a circle on the map about 600 miles out. I would look at cities that are within that range, and then I would start calling brokers. And again, I would, once I identified some brokers that had the freight I was looking for, I really believe in a personal visit. Take them to lunch, take them to dinner, go golfing, whatever, you know, you like to do and what they like to do, but build that relationship. And I don't think you're going to have a problem.
Sounds good. When I'm talking to the brokers, do I even bring that up that I really got to be home on the weekends, or just kind of let that roll? And...
Yeah, no, I would absolutely be upfront about that because they don't really care. They have lots of different freight and they don't really care whether you want to run long or short. It's better if they know. And
sure.
You know, when you show up and you share that with them, it immediately puts you in the top 1% because nobody ever does that. And you can say, look, here's what I want. I'll guarantee you excellent service, you know, sell yourself, but yeah, I would be very upfront about here's the radius I want to work in. And the reason is because I want to be home every weekend. If I can get home once during the week, that'd be awesome. But if not, I'll stay out Monday to Friday. I just want to be home on the weekend.
Yep. Awesome. Good. And I'm actually using the profit gauges myself. I started around the first of the year, and I think it makes the accounting so simple. I just love it.
Excellent. Good. Glad to hear that. Good luck with that. If you have any other questions, give me a call back. Let's go to Louisiana. Rhett, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, thanks. We just bought a Fitzgerald glider kit recently with a Cat C15 in it. And going through the process, I wanted one of those EcoPure oil filtration systems. And they basically talked me out of it. They said it wasn't any good and they'd had a lot of trouble with them and causing engine trouble. So basically, I didn't put one in it. But I want to do the sampling, the oil samples, and I just ordered a kit from you online. And so can you walk me through how I need to do that, where I need to take the oil from and whatnot?
Yeah, let me address the whole issue first, though. And this is kind of why we've had to part ways with Fitzgerald. And I was sad about that, but what they said is absolutely incorrect. There has not been one single case of the OPS causing an engine problem. Not one. I follow every case I can find. People call me all the time. We've been dealing with bypass filtration since 1995. In all of those years, I remember one case where a bypass oil system failed, and it wasn't an OPS, it was a different one, and caused an engine problem, and the oil filter company, their insurance covered the claim because it was clear what caused it. They can't void a warranty just because you do things that they don't like. If their part fails, they're responsible. Now, if they can prove something else caused the failure, then the other part would be responsible, but it doesn't happen. The bypass filter is a bypass filter. If it stops working, all that happens is your oil isn't going to be as clean anymore, but the full flow filters are still on the engine. So this is such a safe product, and it makes engines last longer because it keeps them clean. What happened was they started having problems with their engines burning oil after they were, you know, their in-frame, their new engines, basically, and they were burning oil. And they looked around to find something to blame it on. It's no different than Cummins tried for years to blame their cam issues on bypass filtration. And we absolutely proved that wasn't the case. They have a problem with their cam. It has nothing to do with the oil or the filtration. So that, I just want to be clear about that, because what they're telling you is wrong. There has not been any problems caused by bypass filtration. So if I were you, I would still put the OPS on. But until then, the way you take the sample, you have the kit coming from us, you'll get what's called a vampire tube, which is just a long piece of plastic tubing that is the right size to fit down your oil filler tube. So you just stick the tube down inside there till you reach the oil in the crankcase, hold your thumb over the end, or some have a little pump kind of thing on them, and just pull it up, and just like you would pull out liquid out of a bottle with a straw, and then release it into the bottle. The other way to do it is if you're changing the oil, while the oil is draining out, I would let the first 10 seconds or so run, and then just grab some oil right out of midstream when you're draining it. But that's only if you want to change it. If you're sampling it to see if you need to change it, then I would use the vampire tube.
Yeah, well, they made a sign, basically made a sign something that said that we would change the oil between 5,000 and 7,000 miles, and it's there now. And then if not, then it would void the warranty on the engine. And I guess I don't know what the rest of it is, but I think there's something in there that says we have to change it every so many miles, no matter what.
Here's the thing. They can't do that. There are clear laws about how warranties work, and they can't put those kind of restrictions. It's like, in the past people have said, well, somebody who should be an employee and who is being paid as an independent contractor. And they'll say, but I had this sign saying I would do. You can't change a law by making somebody sign something that says the law doesn't apply. It doesn't work that way. You can have somebody sign anything, but that doesn't change the way the law works. In a warranty, if their part fails, that's what the warranty covers. And you can't sign that away. Actually having oil analysis strengthens your case for a warranty. Because if the engine fails and I have all these oil samples, I can prove that the oil was always serviceable, so the oil couldn't have caused the problem. And if the oil didn't cause the problem, okay, then there's no voiding the warranty. So get the OPS on. Once you have the OPS on, it's a breeze to take an oil sample. There's a button. You just press the button, your bottle fills up. So don't bypass filtration is far superior than not having bypass filtration. And that goes for any bypass filter. I just like the OPS. Let's go to Tennessee. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I actually have two questions. One's fuel tax related, and the other is health related. Which one do you want first?
Let's do the fuel tax.
Okay. I understand how fuel tax works, but I'm confused on one point. Let's just say I'm going to choose two states that I want to fuel up in. One state after fuel taxes is like 40 cents less than the next state that I was thinking about fueling up in. However, the state that is 40 cents more, it costs me less out of my pocket. Let's say it costs me 40 cents less out of my pocket, but the other state is going to cost me less because the fuel taxes are more. So how do you calculate that?
Well, you don't have to calculate it. It helps to understand it. But unfortunately, I hear the music. I'll tell you what, let's carry this over into the next show so I don't have to rush this. Because this is a question that a lot of people get confused about. So I've got to wrap this one up. We will start the next show with this question so I have time to explain it. Thanks for joining me tonight. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Here's what we're going to do. We're not going to have enough questions for an entire hour, but I've got some questions that I didn't get to. So I'm going to just keep going until I get to all the questions, which means if you're on the line and you've got a question, you still have time to get through. Go ahead and press one on your phone and I'll keep going till we get to them all. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. We'll talk about it. At the end of the last show, I had a question about fuel tax, and I just ran out of time to get to it. So we're going to open up the show with that question today. So I was talking with Ron in Tennessee. So, Ron, your question, and this is a really good question. This confuses a lot of people. We're talking about where you should buy fuel based on fuel tax. But honestly, what we're trying to do is get the fuel tax out of the equation so that we know how much we're paying for the fuel and we can buy the cheapest fuel. And your question was, you're looking at two states, you do the math, you take the pump price, you subtract the state tax in each state respectively, and then you look at the best price. And in your example, you said this one state was 40 cents a gallon cheaper, but the state that was actually more expensive for the fuel, I would put less out of my pocket right now. And that confuses a lot of people. So how could it be cheaper in state A if you have to spend more today than you would in state B? Here's where the confusion comes in. When you pay for that fuel today, you're actually paying for two different things. You're paying for fuel and you're paying for tax. The problem is the tax numbers don't get all worked out until the end of the quarter. So you can't really see the savings unless you understand how the system works. So it feels weird to say I'm going to spend more right this minute to get my fuel, but ultimately I'm spending less. The reason you're spending less is the additional money that you are paying today in state A is all tax money. It's not for the fuel. We know the fuel is cheaper. You did the math. You're paying all that additional money because state A, the one that's actually cheaper, has a much higher tax rate. What you would see if I could hold up a fuel tax report is that all of that money you paid extra today, you get full credit for it. That money will either get paid to a different state that maybe you didn't spend enough fuel tax in, or ultimately you'll just get it back as a refund. So it is confusing, and it's a good question, but that's what's happening. If you have to pay more today, you're paying more because the tax is higher, but you're going to get credit for every penny of tax you pay at the end of the quarter when the fuel tax report is filed. Does that make sense?
You know,
yeah, that makes total sense.
However, that's not what I'm kind of asking. I want to know, like, I understand that the cost of the fuel is, let's say the cost is more in one state, but I have the NAS program that tells me how much that tax is actually in the state for that day. So
perfect.
Let's say there's more tax in one state, but yet I can buy the fuel cheaper out of my pocket in the other state. But the tax is more in state A, but I'm going to pay more money out of my pocket in state A. That is state
correct.
B. State B is cheaper out of my pocket, but there's less tax coming, even after it's calculated through the NASTEC system.
Now, I just want to clarify one thing. Don't focus on the tax. Focus on the fuel price. Always buy the cheapest fuel. Don't look at the tax. The tax is where people start get confused. So all we care about is the fuel price. If we're looking at two states, we do the math. The one with the cheapest fuel price is always the one we want to buy. Now, what's confusing you is the one with the cheapest fuel price may mean you have to spend more out of your pocket today. And that's what's confusing you. But what I'm telling you is the only reason you're paying more is because the tax is higher. But I don't want you to focus on the tax. You're going to get credit for every penny of tax you pay. If you buy the fuel in the state where it's cheaper today, that means you're getting less credit towards your fuel tax, and you're going to have to make that up.
Well, isn't the fuel tax calculated from how many gallons you buy, not how much you
right.
spend for the gallons?
Well, it's calculated based on the rate per gallon and how many gallons you burn in a state, not how many you buy. This is another thing that confuses people. How much fuel you buy has nothing to do with anything other than calculating your refund. You get taxed on how much fuel you burn in a state. So if you drive all of your miles, or if you drive a big percentage of your miles in one state, but you never buy fuel in that state, you still owe them all the fuel tax. Doesn't matter where you buy it.
Right. All right, I think I got it.
Yeah, I know it's confusing. It is the single most difficult topic I have getting people to understand. Once you understand it, then I swear, I promise you're going to look around at everybody else and go, oh my God, this is simple. Why don't you get it? So, but until you get it, it is confusing. I get it. I'm going to do a video on this. I'm going to do a webinar where I can show numbers, and I think it's going to make a lot more sense. Let's continue. Oh, wait a minute. I think, Ron, didn't you also have a health question?
Yes, I did. I wanted to find out, I drink Bulletproof coffee every single day, sometimes twice a day. And I want to find out, I like to put heavy cream in my coffee. Is that okay to do?
Heavy cream's okay. It's not as good as grass-fed butter. And the other thing is, if you're using heavy cream, I would seek out the best source possible. Organic, if you can find it. Organic grass-fed would be awesome. But it's actually much easier to find and keep grass-fed butter than it is grass-fed organic heavy cream. So that's one of the reasons that the butter is better. It's easier to find
well,
in really
butter.
Good.
Yeah,
oh,
do
you
butter.
Do both.
I do butter and the MCA, some MC oil.
Oh, sure.
And,
sure.
Yeah, and then it just I add cream just because I like the creaminess of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, then, yeah, that's fine. A lot of people want to know if they can substitute the butter, and you could. It's just not as good. The butter helps us create some butyrate and some other vitamins, so there are benefits to making it butter. But if you want to throw in some cream and you handle dairy okay, then go ahead. Butter is actually easier to digest than heavy cream as well. Let's go to Texas. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Well, I'm currently a company driver, and I have been driving for 2 years. I'm a over-the-road driver and a trainer for this company. My goal coming into trucking was to, quote-unquote, have my own fleet. And I had met and talked with, you know, several owner-operators and was referred to your process and your system. I have gotten the kit, and I'm actually signed up for CMC Live, so I guess we will see you there. However, I'm actually at the point now where I need to start to move. So
okay.
I was just calling to try and get a sense from you as to how can I start to make that transition from here.
So give me a timeline. When do you want to have the truck and be on the road making money with it?
Tomorrow is not soon enough, but by your mythology, I don't have enough money saved up to buy a truck at this point. So I guess I start looking at the leasing options and
no.
Those don't sound favorable, right?
Don't start looking at the leasing option. That's the last thing you want to do. In fact, if you do that, I'm going to hunt you down and beat you. Let me get to a break, and I'll come back, and I'll talk about what you are going to do or what you should do anyway. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Christopher in Texas. So, Christopher, the most important thing you need right now, and I know this is difficult, the most important thing you need right now is patience, because I've watched this over and over and over. People get impatient. I get it. You want that truck. You want to be on the road. You want to get started. And I've watched them fail over and over and over. And if we can just have some patience now, then we can build your business so that it's still going to be here 20 years from now. So
I understand.
If you have the program, there's a chapter in there, and I don't know if you've gotten to it yet or not. It sounds like maybe you have, where we go through the numbers, how much money you have saved, your, you know, how much money you need to live on. And then I actually give you a timeline based on your score. Have you done that part of it yet?
No, actually, Kevin, the product was delivered to our home. I'm actually on my way for home time right now.
Okay, so here's the good news. Go through that book. It's in the beginning. And I actually have you gather some numbers about how much it costs you to live every year, how much, what you have as far as net worth, and it's all explained, and you know, it'll walk you right through the process. And then I actually score you. And then you look up your score in the program, and it will say, based on your score, your timeline should be 6 months. And here are the steps you need to do during that time so that you're ready to launch in 6 months. Or it might be 3 months. For some years, for some people, depending on their score, it's as long as a year. But this formula came from several decades of me helping people get started. And I know what works and what doesn't. And it's a really good formula. But it's going to give you all the steps you need to do. It's going to give you books to be reading, what kind of things you should be setting up, all kinds of good information. So what I would recommend right now is that you wait until you get the program and start on it. And then if you want to call me every week, we'll go over what you're doing. But right now, you're probably not going to ask the best questions. The program is going to give you better questions to ask, and it's going to give me more information to help you with those answers. Does that make sense?
I agree. That makes sense. But here's my question.
Okay.
We have actually minimized our expenses. So from my standpoint, what increases my time is currently the rate at which I am bringing in money as a company driver. So right now I'm bringing it in at 29 cents a mile, and I know that there are companies who would pay me more than that. So I guess the second part, actually, and that was the gist of my call to you today before getting to the program, was whether I need to make a move to a company that would be paying me more as I get ready to transition to being my own owner. That was really the crux of the call.
The answer to that is yes, and I'll tell you why. 29 cents is clearly low. And I don't believe we always take the job that just pays the most, because there are other things that are more important than money, lifestyle, all kinds of things. But you have a clear goal. You want to buy a truck, and buying a truck and getting into business takes money. So in this case, I would be looking for a job, and my sole criteria would be I'm going to find the job that pays me the most. I don't even care if I hate the job. I'm going to go do it for as long as I need to, whether that's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, whatever it is. I'm going to suck it up, and I'm just going to find the job that pays me as much money as I can make, because that moves me closer to my goal. If you called me and said, hey, I'm company driver, I'm happy, my company pays me this, should I go look for more money? My answer would be totally different. But you have a clear goal, and that goal requires money. So in order to reach our goal, we go do the things we have to do. And right now for you, that means, you go find the driving job that just pays you as much as you can get.
Okay. You've been great. Your staff have been great. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate everything you guys do, and keep up the good work. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. And I mean it. When you get the program, call me every week on the show. I love helping people through this process. Let's go to Colorado. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What can I help you with today?
I've got some issues with, I guess, with high blood sugar and the drugs my doctor wants me to take. Listening to you and a little bit of stuff I can find on the computer shows me that those pills will never fix my problem, and they give me more problems than the high blood sugar.
That is correct. That is correct. The drugs, our whole approach to high, let's talk about where you are. Are you, have you been diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic or pre-diabetic?
They say I am type 2 diabetic.
Okay. And I'm assuming you're probably on metformin.
That and two others.
Got it. Okay. So, Our medical approach to blood sugar control is just all wrong. And I don't want to blame it all on the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies, but they're a big part of it. The other part of it is most people just want an easy answer. And I think doctors finally got to the point where they thought, all right, well, just give them the easy answer. And our medical answer to high blood sugar is eat whatever you want, and we'll cover it with enough drugs. But that's what kills people. And that's what gives them, you know, blindness and, you know, neuropathy and all of the complications that come with high blood sugar. And it's a miserable way to live. You have to decide, are you willing to kind of, I'm going to use this word, radically change the way you eat so that you don't have to take all of those drugs? And I can promise you, there are cases every single day of people who cure type 2 diabetes. The medical community will tell you, oh no, you have it, you'll have it the rest of your life. That's not true. It can be cured. Your blood sugar can become under control without drugs. And this is so simple, sometimes I have a hard time understanding why we can't figure this out. You can't possibly have high blood sugar if you just stop putting the sugar in the first place.
Yeah, that's sugar is a really bad habit of mine, has been my whole life, but I am changing, cutting back. I'm trying a lot, and it's having an effect. My numbers are going down, but then they still do that lab test every 3 months, and that catches up with me.
Well, the A1C, which is the number they look at for diabetes, it will take longer to come down. So I can take somebody who is a type 2 diabetic with, you know, blood sugar off the charts, taking all kinds of drugs, and within a couple of days, we can bring their blood sugar numbers back down under control. But that's not going to show up in the A1C right away, because the A1C is a 3-month average. Now, if you eat really strictly, you know, very low carb, very low sugar for a full 3 months, and then take your A1C, you're going to be shocked at how much you can lower it. And it really comes down to how strict you are on eating. And I'm not telling you, you have to go on a diet where you're going to be starving all the time. You don't. In fact, the diet that will fix blood sugar is the easiest diet I've ever been on, because you're just not hungry. And that's the problem with most diets. When you start taking food away and you're hungry all the time, that just makes people crazy. I mean, hunger is a very powerful force. We can't ignore it. What you want to be eating, I'm just going to give you some general ideas. You want to eat a lot of vegetables. Like, you can't ever eat too many vegetables. Don't worry about the carb count. Eat as many vegetables as you want. I would stay away from starchier kind of vegetables. I would, in your case right now, I wouldn't eat things like sweet potatoes. I would even be careful with carrots. I would not eat any fruit for you right now. That may come later after we get the blood sugar back under control. But I would eat lots of vegetables. I would eat lots of healthy fat. And that's where your doctor is going to tell you, as a diabetic, if you eat fat, you're going to have a heart attack. And he's wrong. As long as you cut out the sugar and the carbohydrates, you are going to eat a lot of good, healthy fat. That means things like grass-fed butter, coconut oil, avocados, olive oil. Always use olive oil cold. Don't cook with it. Good quality animal fats like beef fat and pork lard. The better the quality, the better they're going to be for you. And fat is what's going to keep you from getting hungry all the time. Fat is very satisfying to our appetite. And then you're also going to eat a little bit of protein. Not a lot. Don't go crazy with the meat. But you're going to eat animal products. You're going to eat some meat. You're going to eat lots of good fats. And you're going to eat as many vegetables as you want. Don't drink your calories. You should only be drinking water, coffee, or tea. No sugar in it. And don't eat processed food. That's the basic 3-minute outline on what you should be eating. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what you have to do with your medications while you're doing it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Mike in Colorado, and we can cure type 2 diabetes with diet alone. The one thing I want to warn people about is as you are doing this, as you are making these changes in your diet, you do have to work with your doctor to get your drug dosage correct, because you're going to start dialing back the drugs. The ultimate goal would be to get off those drugs completely. If your doctor won't work with you on this, then you have to find a new doctor. And you might want to find a naturopath, an ND instead of an MD, to work with you on this. And there are lots of cases. It's becoming very, very common. Getting type 2 diabetes is a lifestyle disease. In fact, Mike, you just admitted you've eaten a lot of sugar your whole life. That's how we end up getting type 2 diabetes. But we also have to realize that starch is sugar. Starch does the exact same thing to your blood sugar as sugar does. So that means bread, pasta, rice, potatoes, oatmeal, all of those grains that are starchy, your body treats them like sugar because they really are sugar. So you've got to eliminate those starchy foods as well as the sugary foods. But when you are a type 2 on medication, you need to work hand in hand with your doctor as you're lowering your blood sugar, because the medications have to be adjusted. Another excellent resource for this is dietdoctor.com. Go to the website, dietdoctor.com, look up diabetes. There's tons of great articles in there. Let's go to Alabama. Fred, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call, Kevin. My question is receipts. If I get out of it right now, my receipts are blank. How can I store them, and what happens if I do get out of it and I don't have receipts?
What do you mean they're blank? Because they were thermal printed and the ink all faded?
Correct. Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, and that's been a problem since the thermal printers became so common. What I recommend, and let's talk about a whole big picture strategy. You know, we're really, it's so much easier to make everything digital today. The Neat scanner, they make a little portable unit, and they make a desktop unit, is an excellent tool for this. You run the receipts right through the scanner. You can store them. You can even get an account where they store online, so they're completely safe. Even if your laptop dies or gets stolen, your receipts are still available online. So that's one option, the Neat scanner and then the Neat storage service. And if you scan all of your receipts when you get them, you can just throw the receipts away. The IRS says digital copies are just fine. And if you scan that before it fades, then good. Now, if you haven't done that and we have these receipts and they're gone, in an audit, you're probably going to get away with it. If you had a good record keeping system, for example, if you were using our software profit gauges and you end up in an audit and all of a sudden the auditor pulls out a receipt and it's blank, that happens to them all the time. They realize you had a receipt, it was for something. And if it, you know, if you have eight receipts that are blank, and they can look at your accounting and see eight entries that there is no receipt for because they're now blank, well, they're probably going to let you go with that. You're better off if you scan these things or make copies while you can still see them. But just because they fade doesn't mean the IRS is going to not allow it. They might, but I wouldn't worry too much about it. I have a feeling, you know, not all of your receipts have faded, so it's just going to be some. Right. But the best way to do this really is to start making them digital. Get yourself a scanner. And you know what? You don't even have to buy a scanner. You could do this another way. You could use your phone and a service like Dropbox, which is an online storage, or Google Drive, or there's thousands of services that let you store documents online. And honestly, right, with no software, no scanner, no nothing, when you get a receipt, take a picture of it with your phone and upload it to one of the cloud services.
Oh, okay. I didn't think of that. Good idea.
Yeah, that's an easy way that isn't going to cost you anything. Most of these cloud services, you can get a free account, and receipts don't take up a whole lot of storage space. That's one way to do it. The Neat scanner is pretty cool because you can really organize things well, but you don't have to spend any money at all to do this. You've got a cool scanner right in your pocket. Most people do anyway. Let's go to Virginia. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I'm having trouble after I got my truck back in August from getting the motor rebuilt. Sometimes, it happened around four times, when I turn the key, it'll turn over like it wants to crank, but it doesn't want to crank. It won't turn over. And sometimes I have to let the battery charge back up because the battery dies out and the Maxwell charges it back up. And I went out under the hood, checked the fast fuel filter, and it was full on the hydraulic side. And then I go back after it charges the battery back up, and I'll start it again. And it won't start. Sometimes it'll start, but most of the time I have to hit the accelerator a few times while I'm cranking it over. Doesn't happen a lot. Like I said, it only happened four times, but I took it off the Pittsburgh Power, and they said it would have to be recreated, you know, on site for them to even, you know, to be able to diagnose it. So I was just calling you to see if you had any ideas what it may be.
Yeah, it we're losing the prime somewhere, and finding right where we're losing the prime is always the challenge. Do you also happen to have a Fuel Pro system on this, the fuel filter with the glass bowl and you can see through it?
No, they took all of it off when they put the fast on.
Okay, because sometimes those can be the problem. There's a check valve in those that goes bad, so I always ask that first. Is your fast set up so that when you turn the key to the on position, does your fast start pumping?
Yes.
So if you turn that, and I know this doesn't happen very often, and that's why it's going to be harder to troubleshoot. It would be interesting to know if when this happens, if you were to turn the key to the on so the fast starts running and let it run for 30 seconds to a minute, if that would help this truck start or not.
Well, most of the time what I do is I turn to the on position that I do my walk around, check the lights, check the tires and everything, and then I come back, and yeah, it still won't start. Like this, I said, sometimes, go ahead.
This is kind of odd because normally once a truck starts doing this, it does it pretty consistently. So it's unusual to have a truck that only loses prime every once in a while. Have you noticed the times that it loses prime, is it colder outside?
No, the first time was in the summertime, and I was actually sitting on level ground. So,
okay.
And
so how many miles are on this truck?
On the rebuild, on the motor itself, on the truck itself.
Truck itself.
It's 1.288, so it's almost 1.3.
Have you ever replaced all of the fuel lines?
I haven't, and I'm really thinking about that. Was one of the things that I was thinking about doing. I have not did that.
I would do that, and here's why. You know, like I said, finding where the leak is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the fitting that isn't correct, it might be loose. So we know that fuel lines start to deteriorate pretty bad around 700 to 800,000 miles or so. So there's no question your truck is going to benefit from new fuel lines. So if you replace all the fuel lines and you still have this problem, you haven't lost anything. You've got new fuel lines.
Right.
That's always a good thing. But what I find is normally by going through and replacing all the fuel lines, we end up solving the problem even if we never find it.
Okay. I'll definitely do it. Is that a pretty expensive job or?
No, it's not that bad. In fact, you could spend more trying to troubleshoot this problem than you will just replacing all the fuel lines, and it might fix the problem. That's why I like to make that my first troubleshooting step when we know we have a lot of miles on the fuel lines. Let's go to Oregon. Dan, welcome to the program. Oh, hey, Dan, you know.
Hey, it's Ken.
Oh, Ken. Okay, there's the music. Let me get to the break. I wasn't watching the clock. And we'll come back and get to your question right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls and get to as many as we can. Let's go to Oregon. We're going to go back. Ken, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. We got one of the Keto or Keytronics breath analyzers.
Okay.
We downloaded all the software for it. We set up profiles. We plug it in. You know, we did the 12-hour plug-in overnight, and the next day we go to use it, and it says select profile. We select profile, and the thing won't go to start to let us do an analyze. Have you ran across this before?
No, I haven't. Mine goes slow. Like normally when you click on the profile, and when I say slow, it might take like 10 seconds before it actually responds to something, but then it goes right to start. Have you tried use it and you're going to have to get this problem fixed, but have you tried using it just as a standalone, not even connected to the computer yet?
I don't have the battery in it. I plugged it into my USB outlet on my wall jack to try using it as a standalone, and I still couldn't get it to work correctly. Then all it would do is the blue light. Once it got charged up and everything, the blue light would just continuously flash.
Yeah, that's not It sounds like you've got a bad unit.
Okay. So
I mean,
send that back to Amazon then?
You bought it through Amazon?
Yeah.
You might want to look on Amazon and find out who actually shipped it, because I don't think Amazon sells that directly. I think you bought it from somebody who set it up as an Amazon store, and you might want to just call them first, or if you can send it back to Amazon and somebody replaces it. But you could also email Ketonix directly. They're in Sweden, so it's a little funky because the time, but and it usually takes a day or two before I get an answer back, but they've always been really good at responding. And maybe they know. I've never had a problem with mine, but there's like no reset on these things or anything like that. I mean, it's a fairly simple device. Plug it in. But I think before I send it back,
I kind of think it's more software.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I would send them an email first and see what kind of a response you get back. Maybe they have an idea.
We'll do that. And the other thing I was going to ask about, your Bulletproof coffee, you keep on talking about is it the MTC or the MCT oil?
So there's what's called MCT oil, which is medium chain triglycerides. And then there's a couple versions of that. So a true MCT oil is going to be a combination of C8 and C10. And those are two different kind of fats that are in coconut oil. Coconut oil has four different fats. They're identified as C6, C8, C10, and C12. The lower the number, the shorter the chain, and the easier it is for our body to turn it into ketones. So C6 would be ideal. Unfortunately, everybody who's tried to isolate C6 says it tastes awful. Like nobody will drink it. It just tastes nasty. They've isolated C8, which has no taste whatsoever and converts really quickly to ketones in the body. You can buy C8 from Bulletproof. It's called Brain Octane. And I actually put Brain Octane in my Bulletproof coffee every day because I can measure my ketones and they go up in 30 minutes after I drink Bulletproof with Brain Octane in it. Now, it's pretty expensive. MCT oil is going to be C8 and C10, a combination. So it's better than coconut oil for producing ketones, but not as good as just C8.
Right. So are guys using straight coconut oil in their coffee then to not buy the Brain Octane, or is that?
Yeah,
that
a lot of
seems pretty oily.
Most people use just pure virgin coconut oil. Like when I make, or Lisa drinks Bulletproof coffee every morning, but for some reason her stomach will not handle the Brain Octane. She gets stomach pains immediately. And she tried, you know, seeing if her body would adapt to it, and it just wouldn't, and we don't know why. So she uses virgin coconut oil. I used virgin coconut oil for a year before I found the Brain Octane. So coconut oil works great. It's just for producing ketones, the Brain Octane works really good.
Okay, then I'll get with Bridget or somebody and order some of that Brain Octane. Yeah, and I think that's pretty much it. We're into it, and we're working on it. We just wanted to get the Ketronix working and start seeing where we're at. I personally know I need to pick up the vegetables a little bit better. But, yeah, other than that, I've been on it full week now, and I'm down 11 pounds.
Awesome. Yeah. We don't have the Brain Octane in our store yet. We have all the accounts set up. I just have not gotten around to ordering everything I need to order. But you can pick that up. We'll get it in there here pretty quick. I have a whole list of things I have to get done. Let's go to Indiana. Greg, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've listened to your program. I believe it was sometime earlier in the year or last year, you were talking about power boxes or performance boxes for 2016 Cascadias. Have they came anywhere with that from Pittsburgh Power?
Your timing is excellent. They just, I don't even think it's been a month yet. They have a couple options for you. They have the power box, or they have just a program they can put in. So depending on how much money you want to spend, the power box is more expensive. The programming is about half the cost. The advantage to spending more money for the power box is you get total control. You have, you know, 0 to 7, and all every setting is more horsepower, more torque. I love the power box option because if I'm in really bad weather and slippery roads, I just like to turn that off. And having that control is nice. But so far, the early results on the people who are just doing the programming is pretty amazing. I mean, people love the power, and fuel economy seems to be going up by about a half mile per gallon.
Okay. But what's a ballpark figure on both ways to go?
Ah, boy, don't hold me to this, because the one thing I don't try to remember is our pricing, because people change it all the time. I'm thinking you're probably talking like $1,200 or $1,300 for the programming, and about double that for the power box. I think that should get you in the ballpark.
Okay, if you stay with Cascadia, will it work on future years, like a 17 or an 18, if you trade up?
You know, once they've figured out the program for an engine, for the DD15, for example, once they have that program done, then when they bring out a new version of that engine, it's just a matter of tweaking it a little bit. So it's usually the tough part is getting the original programming done. That's what takes them so long. So I can't promise you that the box you would buy today will work on a 2017, but things can be reprogrammed as things change. Let's go to Colorado. Freddie, welcome.
Hello.
Yep, it's your turn.
Oh, thanks. Just I had silence for a couple of seconds. Thank you. You know, I had a question about fuel tax, and it just so happened that when I tuned in, you were explaining really well to this listener. You said that forget about fuel tax and just focus on fuel price. So 100% of the times, you chose fuel where it's cheap. There's never a factor that makes you feel in a state because of how big or how much you drive in?
Nope. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Let me give you an extreme example. Let's say that I live in Youngstown, Ohio, and I always drive west. I never go east in the country. But let's say that just, and this isn't true, but let's say that it was only 5 miles from my foot on that way. Then if I never go to the hospital, that thing has to be this cool, and I can get there to drive through the middle of the line. I think I might be losing you, but yeah, it doesn't matter how much you drive in a state. You always want to buy the cheapest fuel after you subtract out the fuel tax in that state. And again, I need to get my butt in here and get a webinar done about this so that you can just go watch this. If you can see it and I can show you on a fuel tax report and I can show you the numbers, it becomes much easier to understand. Music playing, that means I'm all out of time. I've got to get out of here. See you next time. Be safe, be profitable, fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.
All right.
right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour.